This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's now 8:45 a.m. on Thursday, the 5th of January. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Sherrod Kutton and Julian Ng here with me as we take a look at the most important business news of the day. And of course, everyone's talking about the ringgit and how it has fallen to a new record low of 450.02 against the US dollar. This is the first time it's hit this level since the 1998 Asian financial crisis. So once again, it crossed the 450 psychological mark, shall we say, at 11:20 yesterday. And how low it will go is only time will tell.
So in the Asian financial crisis, 480 was what the ringgit went down to back in September 1998. And we are at 450 now. Are you guys afraid?
Well, I just saw a report by Mizuho Bank, that predicted the ringgit would hover around 470 in the first quarter. So yeah, Jules, I'm afraid.
Well, the question is, you know, how is it going to affect prices of the goods that we buy? I mean, we think often of, you know, gourmet foods, perhaps having
food. That's a fine example.
Let me finish my sentence. That's the only kind of thing that's going to be affected. When in fact we import so much of our food, right? Onions, for instance, and if they're denominated in U.S. dollars, and the trade is, then we're going to see a sharp increase in very basic foods. And so, but have you seen that yet? Has that started to happen? I go into a shop and say, are these prices pre-ringgit fall or after? You know, are shops starting to price their goods?
Yesterday, I was having dinner at a restaurant, lunch at a restaurant. Not a gourmet restaurant, but it had a sign on it that said, as of January 1st, we are revising our prices.
So, that's crazy.
So clearly that there are establishments that are taking this into consideration.
Won't they have to? I mean, in some sense, like, even if you bought them at a different price, right, when the ringgit was stronger, the fact that if you want to renew your stock, you're going to have to get more ringgit in order to buy the same goods from your
suppliers. Absolutely. Just another day in business where you have to manage your cost. And I think that official inflation rates have started to creep up. And I think a survey of a consensus of brokers peg a full percentage point rise in average inflation for next year. And we haven't even talked about whether the CPI in Malaysia reflects our own personal inflation rate. I mean, we have certain preponderances in our spending. Maybe some of us would focus more on children's education overseas, and that would have taken a big whack. Some of us would focus on gourmet food, for example.
That's the only thing I live for.
Yes.
You know, it was actually the subject of discussion yesterday on Bloomberg in the evening yesterday. We're talking about it. They talked about the ringgit. They talked about, in relation to this expression, canary in a coal mine, you know, asking, you know, about the emerging markets and currencies and stocks in the emerging markets.
So currency in a coal mine, meaning it could
canary,
be
canary
in a coal mine, meaning it could be a barometer for danger.
That's right. The canary in a coal mine is there to kind of alert the miners to possible toxic fumes.
So I think Bank Negara is concerned enough to have come up with an 11-page document, which is also an FAQ on the ringgit. This relates to exports and converting proceeds. And I guess they have been mired in quite a bit of controversy recently when they imposed those measures on exporters with a forced conversion of a lot of their proceeds. That has, whether or not it was Bank Negara's intention while they were imposing those measures to prop up the ringgit, it has not had its effect on the ringgit, because since that time, the ringgit has weakened further still. But, you know, Malaysia, from the ringgit point of view, has been one of the worst performing currencies over the last 2 years. Also, from a market point of view, there was this report that came out from Credit Suisse highlighting that Malaysia has been the worst performing market in the last 2 or 3 years. So perhaps some of the maverick investors, if you like, would be looking for possibly a rebound. Maybe there is some kind of a silver lining here.
Maybe, but you know, just to put this into perspective, we're talking about a decline in a weakening of the currency by 22% since January 2015. So if you bought something in January 15, you know, buying it in January 2017 would make it essentially 22% more expensive if it's in US dollars.
You know, also along with this is the FT confidential research report that just come out. And the headline is Malaysian consumers start 2017 on pessimistic note. And, you know, and that pessimism plus, you know, what we see with the ringgit. But what it's saying, interestingly enough, it has a little segment in it. And it says, well, they expect elections to come in the third quarter and no effect. This government will stand and continue to hold power despite this pessimism, despite this bleak outlook.
Sharad, we have a Twitter poll going based on this FT results, FT research findings, don't we, Sharad? You put out a Twitter poll to ask if, in fact, you are feeling a deepening pessimism, pessimistic about good governance in Malaysia.
Right. So we narrowed down to good governance. 83% say yes, they're pessimistic. 17% said no. But actually, our respondent rate is very low. It's only about 40 votes have come in so far. I wonder if people are still on the holiday mood. Have they not come back?
No, it's school. School started, right? So all the parents are probably busy with the first few days of school.
No time to tweet?
No time to tweet. No time for social media when your kids are in school. Okay, 8:51 right now. Daiwa Securities Group has announced they failed in their bid to acquire a minority stake in Affin Hwang Investment Bank. This was after initiating talks some 20 months ago. They've failed to meet Bank Negara's terms and conditions within that stipulated time frame. The deadline was the 31st of December last year.
Even though Malaysia is a smallish market as far as investment banking is concerned, the proposal actually came from Daiwa, who expressed interest some months back to buy into Affin Hwang's investment bank stake in the investment bank. So the question is, why did they do this seeming about turn? I mean, the official reasonings from the regulators like Bank Negara is that they have not gotten enough of the documentary evidence that the purchase should go through. But really, the question is whether this is due to the weak environment that we are experiencing right now. And it also adds to the list of failed bank mergers. Yesterday, we covered news that Bank Muamalat failed to create a mega Islamic bank. And this also follows the failed creation of a mega bank some years back that involved CIMB, RHB and MBSB. So, can we pin down a reason for this somewhat innocuous news?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be a variety of reasons, and not just one reason, but kind of a combination of reasons, right? So from the maybe regulatory hurdles that these mergers need to jump over, if you factor into the increased operating cost of banks, also, you know, capital requirements that have come into play in the recent years, all these factors could have come into play.
Julian, you spent a lot of your formative years in the banking system. When
spent it in kindergarten.
Formative years.
20s and 30s. But you know, when a deal like this falls apart or doesn't go through or whatever, does somebody have to fall on their sword? Is it seen as a big failure? Are people, you know, do heads roll in banks?
I don't think so. I think Daiwa is quite a big financial institution from Japan, and the Malaysian market seems relatively smaller. And I don't think that it's very often you hear about banking deals in Malaysia. You can really count them with your fingers. So the fact that they came out from Malaysia, and the fact that a lot of deals now have been going to the Chinese, I'm not sure if we can put two and two together right now, but I think this is water off the duck's back for Daiwa Securities. But on the other hand, there is a Bloomberg report that says that CIMB and Maybank are still top of the ranking as far as issuing Asian local currency bonds are concerned.
Yeah, so CIMB has maintained its top position in this in this league table. They handle 268 deals worth $8.7 billion last year. That's about 13% of the total issuances of 2016. So really quite a significant achievement for CIMB. But Maybank is comes in at second place also with quite a number of deals counted, 136 deals.
So there are two observations observations from this list of things. First of all, Malaysian banks have trumped any other bank in ASEAN, including the very formidable DBS Group. DBS stands at number 3. And the other thing that that's missing from the list are banks names such as Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan. So
yeah,
this shows that there is still a lot of business to be done in ASEAN, and ASEAN is going to be a major theme over the next few years. A lot of these ASEAN banks, and there is a good number of Thai banks in there as well that achieved the rankings there. This is going to be very good for banks to do the ASEAN business as a dominant theme over the next few years.
MBank has put up 15 acres of land for the second time in 4 years. And these acres of land are where the Highland Towers, the collapsed Highland Towers was located. So the bank has placed an expression of interest advertisement for 50 freehold vacant bungalow lots, which will be sold together with rights to 111 units that unites the Highland Towers. So not just the towers themselves, but also bungalow lots around the area.
Yeah, so the little we know about the case, I believe that an out-of-court settlement was the conclusion to the tragedy, in the sense that the families, you know, kind of achieved closure with that. There were some civil suits, but they were largely dropped. So
actually, there were some damages that were paid to the residents.
Yeah, 52 million, right?
Yeah, 52
so
million.
Out of court settlement. Yeah,
do
but
you realize
there was also some court cases, but they didn't go all the way to the end.
Do you realize it's been 23 years since the tragedy? I mean, 23 years, and that land is just sitting vacant at the moment. They're looking for buyers at this point in time.
So from a commercial viewpoint, the question is whether there is still a huge amount of stigma attached to the land. I'm sure there is. And people would be kind of taboo with a healthy dose of worry and concerns about whether potentially more landslides would happen over there. Mm. Interesting comments from Henry Butcher, real estate COO Tan Chi Ming, saying that developers may not want to fork out millions. In fact, Tang thinks that the price would have fallen since 2013, the valuation of a piece of land there. And this is very interesting on the backdrop of very hot property sector in Malaysia since 2013.
That area has become quite derelict, right? I mean, we've got some cases of crime, petty crime and drug addicts lingering, loitering around there. Well, we'll have to see whether or not there is any interest in MBank's advertisement for this land. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.